You're listening to KRUULP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Listener-supported, grassroots, solar-powered community. Awesome radio.
Yeah, it's powered today because the sun is shining.
And this is Writers' Voices. I'm your host, Monica Hadley, and with me is my mother and co-host, Caroline Kilborn.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Writers' Voices.
We are back in the saddle again.
Yeah. We're back.
We're back. Yeah, we took a little bit of break from the show, a hiatus, and had the great fortune of having Cheryl Fusco Johnson able to fill in for us the last few months of 2012. And you can listen to the interview she did on writersvoices.com or KRUUFM.com. And now we're back. And we are focusing on Fairfield today.
I guess.
Yeah.
Big time.
We have two guests today. We're going to do a half hour with one, a half hour with the other. And they are people that if you've lived here in Fairfield for a while, you probably know or you should know. Let's say that.
Right, exactly.
Caroline, do you want to introduce our first guest today?
Yes, our first guest is Tony Kanauskas.
Kanauskas. Right, Tony? If we got it right, Kanauskas?
Got it, that's correct.
Yeah. Okay. Now, Tony lived in Fairfield for almost 27 years, where he owned and managed the 21st Century Bookstore, and anyone who lived here or has lived here certainly knows about that. He has been blessed to be present in the early days of two important movements, both now experiencing a new resurgence, the raw food movement and Transcendental Meditation Movement. This book is his personal reminiscence of working with his cousin, Victoris Kanauskas, father of the raw food movement, as well as living in Fairfield, Iowa, center of the TM community in the U.S. He now lives in Jacksonville, Florida, and is married to his high school sweetheart after being apart for 40 years. Sounds like somebody I know.
Yeah, it does sound, except you're not married yet.
No,
yes.
No.
Caroline also reconnected with her high school sweetheart after not even speaking for how long?
54 years or so.
54 years.
At least.
Welcome to Writers' Voices, Tony.
Oh, thank you for hosting me today and returning the favor.
Oh.
You probably don't remember, maybe you do. I hosted you guys.
Oh, I remember that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I hosted you and your mother at your inauguration musical duet at our bookstore.
That's right. Right.
Piano.
Yeah.
That's right. And it was, yeah, that was probably the last time that I've performed. Mom performs all the time, but it was a really nice venue.
It was. It was.
Was a great place to have musical groups and everything. Yeah. It was a wonderful place for a lot of things, yeah.
It was. It
yes,
was.
Yes, I was really unhappy when I realized that it was no longer there.
Well, things happen.
I know.
Want to better things.
Well, the title of Tony's book is A Time of Innocence, My Personal Memories of Victoris Kolvinskas and the Transcendental Meditation Community. So, Tony, what prompted you to write this?
Well, one thing leads to another in my life. It's like a set of dominoes. I lost the bookstore. I got in touch with Deborah again, and I moved to Florida. I was doing a sales job. I lost the sales job. I had a lot of free time. So I started taking long walks in the Florida sun, and I really did feel unsure of what I was going to do next. I was kind of confused. My wife, Deborah, she suggested that I write a book about my life's experiences. She actually felt I did have some interesting stories to convey. Since I was there at the birth, in the early days of the raw food movement, in the early days of the TM movement back in the early 70s. She felt I had a certain audience which would be interested in my life experiences. My cousin, I got a cold today. My cousin Victoris Kolvinskas taught mathematics at the University of Connecticut. He had a brilliant mind, but he had really bad health issues, which led him on the path to natural healing and health. He began studying natural health modalities and became introduced to the works of Norman Walker, who's famous with juice fasting, and Arnold Ehrhardt, whose emphasis was on mucusless diet and fasting. And he started healing himself through natural techniques, a lot of the different things he was dealing with. And he ended up with being led to Ann Wigmore in Boston. And they got into involved with the whole raw foods movement, which the theory about the raw foods is that cooking above a certain temperature destroys the enzymes inherent in food. It does create stress on the body. It does put it into overdrive in order to digest and obtain the nutrients from the cooked food. And at that time, I was 18 years old. Victoria's got me interested in raw foods when I was 18. And one thing led to another. I dropped out of college. I was working at my mother's factory, not getting anywhere. And he asked me to come in and work with him. So I moved to the Boston area and helped distribution and fulfillment of his book, Survival into the 21st Century, which probably sold over 250,000 copies. He was also instrumental probably in getting me to start TM. He got me to go to a TM lecture in Cambridge, Massachusetts, thinking that would do wonders for me. So I moved the distribution of Vic's books to, after TM, of course, I got it, moved the distribution of Vic's books to Fairfield, wanting to be in the Fairfield community. And that fulfillment of Victoria's books led to evolve into the 21st century.
And
you can say I was a witness probably to the early days of the raw food movement, as well as the early days of the TM movement, as well as the genesis of Fairfield as a thriving artistic community. At first, I was a little hesitant about writing this book. I had anxiety about doing this. I comforted myself by thinking if I could just write a page or so a day, I should be able to finish it in about a year. My wife gave me a notebook to write in, and as soon as I started to write, the words just flowered out as if there was a reservoir inside me that just probably needed to come out. And once that slight crack in the dam, the words just gushed out, and I finished the book in about 2.5 months. It was actually a very healing thing for me to do. The writing helped me let go of the one life I had in Fairfield and fully embrace my new life in Florida. So I guess that's, in a nutshell, what caused me to write Time of Innocence.
Wow.
You guys read the book?
Oh, yes, indeed.
So, well, see, we first moved here in 1972.
Let's speak a little closer.
We first moved here.
Want to know why I call it the Time of Innocence?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
When I first began the raw food diet, I had, it was my first experience with spiritual experience since I started fasting. I probably lost about 40 pounds, and I got down to probably 135 pounds. You know, I'm 6'2", so I was pretty thin, but I had a unique, tremendous spiritual experiences from fasting. And at that time, I felt it was like the answer I was searching for. And then when I started meditating, there was a brief time I felt that this was the answer to everything as well. Because at the beginning, you felt like you were just in love. It just had these incredible experiences, both with raw foods and meditation. And in my heart, I felt that raw foods and then later TM would have the opportunity to revolutionize and change our society within a few years. So within myself, I had this innocence, probably as many of our meditators and raw foodists have, that, you know, that this is really the thing. This is going to change everything for us and make us live in heaven. So, again, I had this innocence about it. But then over the years, kind of daily life kind of was, I was hit with the realities of daily life. I mean, there was still a lot of stress in my life, financial relationship. Daily life still was a drudgery. So I come to realize that these are tools, but we're not going to be given a free ride to paradise. So it's like the fall from my naive innocent garden of paradise. So my memoir is like a common theme that I believe was shared by a lot of seekers.
Now, some people seem to be
similar to maybe to an intoxication one feels when you're falling in love, similar to that. Of course, many that is later replaced by sobering realities that life throws at us. So I call it a time of innocence, and I think many of your listeners can relate to what I'm saying at this time.
I think so too, Tony. A lot of people, though, when reality intrudes, they become disillusioned and maybe even bitter about the hope that they had for these tools, TM or raw foods or whatever it is for other people. I don't get the feeling from reading your book that you are at all bitter or disillusioned about it, just maybe more realistic.
Well, That's actually a good question. Looking back on my life now, I see this like, I don't know, I talk about it in my book, it's like a set of dominoes, one falling on another. I lost one thing, I got dropped out of college, that led to Victoris. Victoris led to TM. I left Connecticut, moved to Fairfield. Everything led from one thing to another. And as soon as, like, I lost my sales job, I started writing the book. As soon as I finished the book, I got another sales job. So I guess experience over the years has taught me, the most important thing is it's taught me that if you just let go, I think you'll be taken care of. I mean, maybe that sounds idealistic or something, but I feel that's the way my life has been. I've been sort of like taken care of, so I kind of just lay back and rest into the whole thing. I guess that's what it is, yeah.
Now, Tony, you spent your whole life with, well, not your whole life, but a large part of your life with, excuse me, with books and writers and publishing other writers. Did you never feel the urge to write yourself before?
Well, I was never thought I was a very good writer, but I did win a couple of, I got like best short story in my freshman class, and I did write some things and people liked them. So I felt, and my father was a good storyteller, so I felt maybe I had something in that in me, but it's when I started writing the newsletters, when our store went out of business temporarily and Len and Dean Oppenheim took it over for 5 years, they wanted it to keep it going. He wanted me to write a newsletter with him, and I was a little apprehensive about writing something every month. I didn't think I could do that, but because I was doing that, I got a confidence in myself that I could write. And I mean, as I can write for myself, in writing something for myself, I got something out of it. And if somebody else got something out of it, well, that's extra good, too. I did find that I was getting things. I was actually bearing, it's like a counseling for myself, writing. And so I got a confidence with that. And I think, you know, writing the newsletters, having a fear about that, finally led to writing the book, which I had anxiety a little bit about it. But once I started doing it, it just kind of really, really gushed out to me. And my advice to anybody that wants to write is, I think it's important to keep a journal and just write anything that just flows from your consciousness. Don't edit your words. Just write. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I felt like I was writing nonsense in my journal. And actually, later I reread it, and there was sense in it, in the writing that I did not pick up at first. So editing can come later after a passage of time. But I would highly recommend that writers just don't edit yourself, because there's a lot of stuff going to come out of you. And sometimes it seems nonsensical, but later on when you read it, it's an aha thing. You know, you just, oh, yeah. Then you think, I said, did I write that? It's like after I wrote this book, I read the book, I said, did I write that book? Okay, it was coming from me. It was like coming from something else. And
I've had that experience,
writers,
too.
This is probably something that you guys do, too. You should always read good writers.
Yes.
That's what inspired me, because I was reading good writers before I wrote the book, and it just created this surge of creativity in me. It's like reading authors who write well, that causes such a joy in your spirit. It does stir your own creativity, and it just pushes you to go beyond the mundane filler prose. It creates sublime poetic expression. Now, some of the people that I could recommend is like Stoner by John Williams. It's an excellent novel. Martin Eden by Jack London. Anything by Cormac McCarthy. Now, I read Cormac McCarthy. He's an excellent writer. I can't understand half of the things he's saying, but I feel good after reading. I mean, I just finished a book called Canada by Richard Ford. These are all excellent. I mean, you just get into the writing. It just takes you, it transforms you, as opposed to, you know, other kinds of stuff, other kind of writing. But, you know, you have to read good writing if you want to be a good writer, because it just inspires you. Absolutely inspires you.
I think that's very good advice. And sometimes, particularly young writers may think that they don't want to read because then they're afraid that they'll be copying or be, you know.
Well, there's nothing wrong with copying, because look at the Beatles. They copied a lot of stuff from the old rock and rollers. They even admitted it.
Oh, absolutely. There are only, 29
plots?
Nothing new
under the sun. Everything is just a rehash done in your own way. And a lot of my writing is just rehash. I see a particular phrase or something I love, and I just turn it to make it my own. But still, the original inspiration came from somebody else.
Exactly. Now, Tony, my sort of perception of you has always been of a very private person. So in a way, it surprises me that you were willing to share as much of yourself on the written page as you as you do in this book.
Well, it kind of scared me. I said, people are going to read that. And, but it's also good for me because it may be come out. So
exactly.
I also wanted to do something. I wanted to bring out the silence I felt writing it and hopefully transmit it to the person reading it, because that's what books, good books do. I mean, I'm not saying my book is good. I'm saying it's something that I wrote, and people can feel my consciousness reading it. They can know, people knew me in Fairfield to a certain degree, but now that they can know me a little bit better, because it's easier for me to write than to talk.
Have you considered...
So I've expressed myself through writing, and people can read the book and get to know me a little bit better if they have an interest in doing that. And that's actually why I called, I don't know if you know the name of the press, I called it Silent Word Press. And the reason I called it that is there can be many responses and feelings created by the spoken word, as you guys know. Some can be more beneficial than others to somebody's nervous system. And I think the most life-affirming being are the few words that just come spontaneously from a deep silence within. This does cause the listener to feel his or own deep silence. So I decided to call my press Silent Word Press, as this is my goal in writing and speaking, is to have that consciousness transmitted to somebody else. And, you know, that's what I'm trying to do. Mm-hmm. Hopefully I'll get better over time.
Well, I think you're already very skilled at that, actually. When reading the book, I definitely felt like I was connecting with you.
You got to know me, huh?
Yes.
Were you surprised about me, or surprised, or did you feel underneath that was who I was?
I wasn't surprised. I felt, I felt like that's who you were. Yeah.
Okay.
Kristen, the only connection I had with you was that I knew you as a storekeeper and the bookstore, and always very accommodating to me and helpful to me, and I purchased several books from you. And I was just wondering if you were thinking of opening another bookstore at some point.
Opening another bookstore? That is not going to happen.
Oh, okay.
Of our society, no.
Yeah.
That's like... you know, there are a few independent bookstores, but a lot of them have closed. And unless you have something like probably Revelations, which deals with a lot of food and items like that, and a combination of things. But no, I don't have an interest probably in opening another bookstore, even though I do have some rare books, Tia Movement books that I still sell, mail order here. I did a bunch of shipments the other day over quite a bit. I went to the post office. So I still mail order stuff. I still order stuff that are specific. I have a catalog of rare books, TM Movement books that are hard to get, so, and I also sell them through Amazon, so I still have a little bit of that, and so I'm connected, and people call me once in a while, and they want to know if I can order them a book or something, but, you know, a lot of times I say, no, you should just get it from Amazon, but there's still a little bit of connection there, but that's in the past now, you know, it's time to go forward.
Mm-hmm. So, Tony, there's a lot of talk nowadays, a lot of interest in self-publishing, and it seems like, in a way, you were at the forefront of that movement, too, with 21st Century Publications.
What it is now, it's through Amazon, it's called Create Space. It doesn't really, it's very cost-effective. You don't really have to pay anything for them to store your book on their cloud server. And they just print them up as people order them, so there's no inventory involved. It's a whole different thing now than it was 10, 15 years ago. You don't have to have physical inventory. They have it on their computer, and they just print it up as people order it. So it's a very efficient way of doing it. It wasn't that expensive. I had somebody format it and help create a cover for me. I used my own photograph, but I helped them. They designed, put it together in a nice way, so... It was very cost effective to do it. It's a lot easier now to get a book published than it was 10, 15 years ago.
Right.
They do everything to get your ISBN number for you, everything. It's very efficient. It's like mind-boggling how much the publishing world has changed in the last 10, 15 years.
Now, with 21st Century Publications, you were, in a sense, self-publishing your cousin's books.
Right, we were. We were self-publishers. Yeah, that's true. We went back in the 70s, we self-published his book, and of course, Survival of the 21st Century sold 250,000 copies for a self-published book. That's pretty phenomenal.
And did any of the big publishing companies ever come approach you and want to publish it under their masthead?
Far out for them.
Pardon?
It was too far out.
It was too far out for them. Yeah. Well, yeah, but things
Survival
like...
21st Century, but it's yeah. quite an amazing book, but I don't think the mainstream books... publishers at that time would have touched it. Maybe nowadays it's changed a lot, but back then, no.
Right. I mean, there have been other cases of people who self-published books that were kind of far out, like The Celestine Prophecy, which then later became, I think, went mainstream.
A big, big seller, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And
ours was very, very off. I mean, they got into breatharianism. You don't need anything. You live off solar energy. Arianism. You know, all kinds of stuff, sexual sublimation. It's a lot of different things he went into. It was kind of amazing stuff, but I think people were afraid to touch it, you know.
Now, is the book still in print?
Oh, yeah. It's still selling well.
So, and are you still distributing
it? I sell through Amazon, you know. I don't anymore. I'm not part of that company anymore. Victoria's and me are actually very good friends and close, but Victoria's has that sold through Amazon.
Oh, interesting. So, now when you were ready to publish your book, did you consider submitting it to mainstream publishers, or was it always your plan to self-publish?
No, I wanted to do it myself. I didn't want anybody to do it for me. I like to have full control of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like to create the cover, not edit it the way I wanted to edit it. I don't want somebody else to do it. I mean, I just felt comfortable doing it by myself. For other people, that's probably not the way to go because they want to get it out there and they want to have it a lot of publicity. My book is a niche book. It's I guess even if you're not, I've had people not into TM or Rothwood's read and really liked it, but it's kind of a niche market, and I don't really, you know, I can advertise it myself. I mean, I don't know. Maybe in the future somebody wants to pick it up, but right now I just wanted to do it on my own.
I wanted to tell you something about your remark about saying that you had always been cared for, because I believe in the journey of life, God has a plan for you,
right?
And in the troubles of life, He has promised to help us.
Mm-hmm. And absolutely, yes.
Yeah,
and you just have to let go and accept that. I mean,
yeah.
You have to be able to surrender to it. If you don't surrender, it's like the Rumi poem somebody sent me about the God being having a game of chess with God, and God makes a fantastic move. And the saint, the difference between a saint and a person who's not a saint is that the saint sees the fantastic move God made and says, oh, I love it. I surrender to this outcome. I love it. I love it. Whereas another person who's not a saint would still think he has 1,000 moves to make.
Well, in your book, too, you have a quote from Ernest Wilson. Times of change are times of fearfulness and times of opportunity, which they may be for
absolutely
you.
Absolutely true, and they are scary. And I was scared each time. Don't get me wrong. I was nervous and scared, but there's a part of me that was exhilarated, too, with it. So there was both aspects, exhilaration and the fear, both.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Tony, why don't you read an excerpt? We only have about 5 minutes left, but if you could read a short excerpt to give the audience a feel for what your book is like. And we do, Mom and I both enjoyed reading this.
Yes.
I read it clear through, which I don't always do. I don't always have time for my guests, but I somehow found the time.
I wish I could say that the book was available at the 21st Century Bookstore, but that would be lying.
Where is it available?
It's available at Revelations. You can get it at Amazon, Revelations, Amazon, or through our website, 21stbooks.com, 21stbooks.com. You can get it at those places.
Great.
I think Revelation ordered some copies, so they should have some there.
Good. We do like to support our local bookstores when we can.
Do you want me to start reading?
Yes.
Okay. On a recent visit to Fairfield, May 2012, I felt the great spiritual energy of the town, the art, and liveliness intermixed with deep silence. It was no longer the tumbleweed town I pictured it to be one time. There were so many events in town that it was hard to choose which to attend. While dining in the Annapurna, my wife Deborah and I noticed how the students at the university looked so innocent and happy, their whole lives ahead of them. They were confident they were going to change our world. Now, there will always be a love and fond memories within myself about what the TM movement was like back in the 1970s and 1980s. We meditators felt we were going to change the world. We were full of energy and passion. We all went on long meditating courses, and our eyes radiated bliss. We wore our shoes. We maxed out our credit cards or our parents' cards to go on course after course. We didn't care. We were going to bring heaven on earth. We became checkers and teachers and siddhas and governors of the Age of Enlightenment. Some went on to become ministers and rajas. We were riding the crest of a huge wave towards the shore of tranquility. We were innocent and full of confidence because we knew we were all headed to somewhere special. Of course, in my own heart, part of the mystique of the early days was a 21st century bookstore. It was special and magical. I didn't create the bookstore as a mother does not create her child. I witnessed its birth. I nurtured it, helped it to grow, and in the end, I let it go. So that's one of the things I wrote. Mm. Do you want me to read something else? Do I have time?
You do. You have a couple minutes.
Okay, the first time I went into the dome. Okay, my first time. The first time I went into the dome was my second day in Fairfield, unaware of the security issues there. My cousin Victoria, who helped me move here, I asked him to come and experience the dome with me. It was just an afternoon program was getting out. Victoria and I walked up the long flight of stairs and peeked inside. Security personnel immediately rushed over and interrogated us, escorted both of us out of the dome. The next day, after driving Victoria to the airport, I went to Building 109 on campus to apply for my pass to be allowed in the dome. They gave me a pass and a current sticker so I could attend the meditation sessions. That afternoon, we were required to attend an orientation meeting. The teacher giving the orientation told us of the importance of the badges, as there was a security breach in the dome the night before. That was me. All right. So there's a little flavor of the humor and the lessons of the book.
Wow. Yeah. It was very enjoyable.
Tony, thank you for sharing these stories of your past with all of us. And, you know, for those of you who are in Fairfield, you might find yourself in the book, possibly.
There are a few people who are in the book, though. No, I didn't change their names to protect the innocent.
I know there were a few. I'm like, who? I wonder who he's talking about there. I wonder who that is. And there were some that I knew, but I wasn't quite sure about all of them.
Of course, you were part of our 21st Century Bookstore for a while. You were our accountants.
That is true.
Yep.
And we performed there our music.
And you performed there. That's right. Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I do feel like
too.
I was one of the ones, when you talk about the people who kept coming in and buying books, even though they could get them cheaper on Amazon.
Right, that's right.
I was one of those.
You and your mother both, yes.
Yep.
Well, Tony, thanks again for joining us today. And there's some really wonderful stories in here, a lot of history, personal history and movement history and kind of world history in a sense.
Yeah. So from the hippie days to the current IA days,
That's right. That's right. And will you be writing any more books?
I don't know. We'll see where my next domino falls.
Okay.
Well, if so, I hope you'll let us know.
I will let you. Thanks for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks. Okay. All right. Now we're going to take a short musical break, and we'll be back in a minute with our next guest.
Am I done?
Welcome back to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline on KRUU FM 100.1 in Fairfield, Iowa. We were just speaking with Tony Kanauskas, the author of A Time of Innocence, My Personal Memories of Victoris, Kolvinskas, and the Transcendental Meditation Community. If you missed part of the interview, you can catch it Monday morning at 8 a.m., or it will also be up on the KRUU FM.com website and writersvoices.com eventually. And now we move on to our second guest today, Chris Hallinger.
Chris Hallinger was born and raised in Wincote, Pennsylvania. That's in the suburbs of Philadelphia. He's been published in Penthouse Magazine, the Des Moines Register, the Iowa Source, and the Ottumwa Courier. Life on Earth is his first book. He currently lives in Fairfield, Iowa. And I must say, this this is a very interesting book.
And welcome to Writer's Voices, Chris.
Thank you.
And when I first started reading this, I thought, yeah, who does that remind me of? Oh, yeah, Dave Barry, one of my favorite authors.
I think somebody else has said, that's in one of my Amazon reviews, was some they put similar to Dave Barry. I think actually Tony wrote that.
Oh, really?
The last guest. He wrote
I was going to mention, you are in Tony's book. Is Tony in your book?
Tony's not in my book, but he had a lot to do with this book, and actually he kind of inspired it. I saw him around 3 or 4 years ago, I'm not sure how long ago now, somewhere in 2009 in Revelations, and I was just starting to write again after a long layoff, and I had an idea for an article about my older sister who had just died. That's her on the cover. She was a wheelchair athlete in Hawaii who had just died. So I just begun writing again after a long layoff, and then I saw Tony, and I told him about my idea. And Tony had two ideas. He said I should write a book, and I should also write a local article for a local paper or magazine. So I did both things. I wrote, I started on this book kind of on his idea. I just started writing. And then I also wrote an article. I was a student at Parsons College for a year. And I had an idea to write an article about that in the source. So I did that first. And I wrote that. And Tony really liked both ideas. And he kind of inspired me to do them. So Tony was part of this.
Now, are any of the essays that are in this book, had any of them been published before?
Not really. Well, one of them... there was one essay in there called, I think it's called Why Movies Are Better Than Reality. And it's this whole list of opinions about the difference between movies and reality. And that was actually published somewhere here in Fairfield.
On page 57.
There was a little, it's almost like a little pamphlet, a little short book about Fairfield creativity, and the person in there liked my writing, and I think that one was in that book. But other than that, all these are just new for this book.
See, this movies are better than reality. It's really great. The acting is better. The scenery is better. The music is better. and they make more sense. Yeah, that's right.
Yep. And the jokes are funny.
And the jokes are funny.
Sometimes.
Yeah. That's true.
And the bad guys get what's coming to them. That's the best part.
And you can be pretty sure there'll be a sequel.
That's right. We're not sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And also, the popcorn is cheaper. You know, that's the thing. You know, I mean, we know these things, but to see them in print... And to be able to read them, it's fun. It really is fun.
Now, the title of your book is Life on Earth. How did you choose that title?
Well, that was actually really tough. I had, I went through around, I must have been through 5 different titles. And I just really had a hard time with it. It was like, it might have been the hardest thing about the book for some reason. And, I had one time I was just having this sort of daydreaming about being under a poster and saying book signing and saying meet the author of an actual book, and then so I changed my title to An Actual Book. I thought that should be the title. That was kind of strange and funny. And that was it for a while. And then one of my titles, the chapters in this book, is called Secular Mackerel, which I thought was kind of humorous, and instead of Holy Mackerel. And I had that as a title for a long time, and that was actually the working title, and I was just about to publish it, and I was talking to my brother on the phone, and he said, Chris, that title really stinks. He said, he said, that's a terrible title. And then my computer guy agreed, and everybody told me they didn't like it, so just at the last second, I just came up with Life on Earth.
Now, you have a whole... Actually, you have 2 lists of alternative titles in the back of the book. Were any of these actually in the running?
Actually, that was kind of funny because I was in that quandary. I couldn't figure out what to call it. And I just said, all right, I'm going to sit down and just brainstorm. So those lists are what I came up with. I just sat there, and there was actually three of them at that time. I had three lists in alphabetical order. And then I was just rereading them, and I thought they were really funny. So I just put them in as an appendix to the book. But I don't think any of them were really serious contenders.
Well, some of them I like. I like Be Careful. I mean, I like a lot of them, but Be Careful What You Wish For, Then Wish For It Anyway.
Right. Because we all do that. You know you do that.
And Keep Going, You'll Die Eventually.
How about this? We're All in This Together, Nobody Gets Out Alive. That's not in there, but that's one of my favorites. Yeah.
Reality, It's Not For Everyone.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
I'm working on book two, so I guess any of these could be.
Could be.
If you, I think it is good to have a funny, I really kind of wish I had a more clever and funnier title, because I think that helps people, attracts attention. So maybe I'll try to pick one of these for the book two.
That's true, because you wouldn't necessarily from this title know it's a humor book.
Right, you're not sure what it is, right?
Yeah.
Okay, tell me what's the meaning of the cat and the mouse on the... chapter, he has a cat and a mouse cartoon.
You may know, or people, listeners may know, John Shermer, who's a local artist and sculptor, and he did this cover painting. He's a great guy, musician, artist, all-around guy. And he was a fan of my writing. He read a lot of the book and then agreed to do the cover painting for me. And it was based on a photograph of my older sister, I just mentioned, had just died in Hawaii. So she was a eccentric character and a really funny person and a really adventurous soul. And for the last part of her life, she was in a wheelchair, but she still had all these athletic adventures and different types of adventures in Hawaii where she lived. So at this time, she had just... she had just completed a marathon in her wheelchair, and it wasn't a racing marathon. I mean, it wasn't a racing wheelchair. It was just a plain hospital wheelchair, and it took her all day, and the police kept the route open for her. And then at the end, she was on the beach, and it just had her arms out and was celebrating this victory of doing this.
Yes.
So I took that photograph and showed it to John, and then he did this really nice... colorful oil painting. And then we just started both thinking of different things that we wanted to add to it. And I think first he came up with one of them. Maybe he had the cat there in a Hawaiian shirt. And I said, there needs to be something else. And then he said, yeah, so he added a mouse, and then he had the cat and mouse. And I really love them both. And then I used it as my logo in the book.
Yeah.
And I really like dolphins too. And I think he somehow knew that and stuck it in there. So I'm really happy with how the whole cover came out.
It's very nice. Maybe one reason why we like this book so much is because we're related to this guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I found this out years ago that we are related because...
Yeah.
Well, I am. You're not.
No, I'm not. By marriage.
By marriage, yes. Oh. So it's my father was a Her.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
He was 11th generation descendant of Hans Her.
Yeah, my middle name is also Her, and my grandfather's name was Robert Her. And there are traces to the Hans Her. And I know we went there and visited the Hans Her house in Lancaster.
I've been there, too. I've been I grew up in Lancaster.
Okay.
So I went to Hans Her Elementary School, and my grandparents lived just a few miles from where they had moved the Hans Her house to. So I'm wondering, and Robert is a family name in our family, too.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if our grandfathers might have been brothers. Because my grandfather had like a slug of brothers.
We'll have to trace this down somewhere.
Yeah.
Yes, really, really.
Did your grandfather or great-grandfather have a lot of siblings?
Boy, I'm pretty vague about the family history.
All right, we're going to have to check that out.
Yep.
We could be his closest second cousins.
I know. We'll have to figure it out. I'm not sure how. I guess online or something. Because
I've got the whole genealogy.
Okay.
Yeah. So we might be able to figure it out.
Yeah, my grandparents were Robert Hearn and Robert and Arlene Hearn. But
Okay, yeah, we have Carol in the studio too, although we're not going to be able to hear her unless she comes right up to the mic. So Carol Oliker.
There's just one thing I'm dying to say, which is that the reason I really love this book is that so many people who have bought it have told me that they've laughed out loud reading it and read it to their husbands or boyfriends at night on their way to sleep. And Chris is very quiet and introverted and walks around town kind of looking serious. And most people don't talk to him or know him. And years ago once he said, I feel sad, nobody really knows me. And now with this book, I think Tony said something about that too.
Yes.
You know, people come up to him and they're laughing and they see him and they say, I didn't know you were funny, you know, and it's like a completely different.
Well, yeah.
So I'm very happy about that. He's coming out.
Well, that was one of the questions that I had on the list for you about whether you, or I think I did, I meant to put it on there, about whether you are funny in person, too.
Yeah, the answer is no.
Well, I got to read this little section here because I just laughed, really laughed out loud. Now it's late at night, time to hit the hay. Sleep is really weird, isn't it? You just lie there all night with a dumb expression on your face. Then you get to watch a movie of yourself back in high school. For some reason, dressed only in underwear with a big test about to happen. Or in my case, you can't find your locker.
Oh, I do that one too. Or you find, you know, the locker, but you can't remember the combination.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I love the first paragraph of the first essay, The Life of a Writer, because, of course, here on Writer's Voices, that's what we're talking about, is the life of a writer. Do you want to, Chris, would you like to read just that opening for us?
Yeah, please do.
Okay. Being a writer is a good life. You get to work on your own. There is no boss over you cracking the whip, unless that is actually what you are looking for. You make a good salary for the time you put in. For example, I have personally made over $700 in just a few short decades. You can't argue with that kind of dough.
So have you always thought of yourself as a writer?
I started in 1975. I was actually working for the TM organization in Livingston Manor for the press. And as a typesetter, and I started writing funny things and satires of newsletters and just a few little funny, humorous things. And people started telling me, well, you should be a writer. And then that was the first time I thought, well, maybe I could. And then after that, I just started. And then I spent around 15 years kind of considering myself a writer, and that's really what I wanted to be doing. And I sent things to magazines and had one thing in Penthouse magazine. That's where I made 600 out of the 700. But then I thought that was my breakthrough, and I was really just gonna be a writer from then on. But it just didn't happen. And after a while, I just faded out on it and stopped for a long time. I stopped. Spent another 15 years. Just totally gave up on it.
And one of the things that you did during that hiatus, I'm assuming, is become a landlord, because you write about that quite a bit in here.
Yeah, that's for the last 12 or 15 years, I've been a landlord, so I do write about that. It's
you don't recommend it, do you?
No, it's been hard for me. It's
yeah, you have some really interesting things to say about that.
It's been a struggle, and so that was one of the things I did want to write about in this book.
Now, experience. Chris, Tony in the previous interview talked about how important it was for writers to read good writing. What kind of books do you enjoy reading?
I like reading a lot, and kind of like Tony, I just like anything that's good writing. I don't really, doesn't matter that much what. For some reason, I don't know. I guess it's because I don't know which ones are good. I don't read that much fiction. It's mostly nonfiction. I read a lot of historical things or biographies, autobiographies.
Do you read humor?
I like humor a lot, too. Yeah,
do you have any favorite humorous writers that inspire you?
P.G. Woodhouse would be a big favorite. What's his name? Jeeves, the butler, and all those kind of stories.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a big fan of his. I have stories of his that sitting by my bed that I've read and reread for years that I like a lot.
Now, what about the humorous essay form?
Sure, I like it. I've read a lot of Dave Barry books and
David Sedaris is one that
I love David Sedaris.
Yeah.
I have some of his books that I love too.
Yeah, he's one of my favorite. And I, always go back to Irma Bombeck too. Mm. She was really, really funny. Let's see. Now, have you ever taken writing courses or attended workshops or?
No, I've never. I wrote in here about one that I tried to do. I had real bad experiences in school when I was growing up, and I was a bad student, and I just avoided school and any kind of group thing. So I'd never been in writers' groups. I've never studied writing. I tried one time. I think my mother sponsored me to go to a writer's workshop in Vermont one time, and I just felt so out of place there that I gave up. Actually, after a couple of days, I switched to tennis.
Did you enjoy that?
The tennis was good. Yeah, I learned. I got better at my backhand, so that was good. So it's really been just kind of a solitary thing for me. I just sit by myself and write. So this has been a new experience. It was scary for me to bring out what I was writing and first start showing it to a few people and have people edit it. People give me their opinions and give me advice about it. And then to publish it and hand it out to people was scary for me. I just didn't know what people were going to think of it. So,
but you've gotten a good response.
It's been great so far. People have really responded well way more than I dreamed for, than I hoped for.
That's because it's good.
That's good.
And your book, I know, is available at Revelations. I've seen it there. And I'm assuming on Amazon as well.
It's on Amazon. It's on Kindle version on Amazon.
Here comes Carol again.
I'm also selling them from home. And if people buy Tony's and Chris's together, they get a discount on both.
All right. And so how would you contact?
Oh, well, they can either call me at 472-5437. It's okay to do this?
Yeah.
Or email me at Iggy's Daughter, IGGYS, as in Sam, and then DAUGHTER, at yahoo.com. Okay.
And the title of Chris's book is Life on Earth. You're listening to Writers' Voices, and our guest today is Chris Hollinger. The book is Life on Earth. It's a very funny memoir, mostly. I mean, it's pretty much about your life and things that have happened to you.
It is.
Is there much exaggeration for a humorous effect, or did all these things really happen?
No, I think... I try to say it in exaggerated ways sometimes, but I think the stories are really true.
Yeah. How do you decide to write about a specific topic? Is it a kind of thing where you've always thought, this happened to me and it was really funny? Or is it like, this happened to me, how do I find the humor in that?
I guess sort of like Tony was saying in your last interview, I would just sometimes just start writing and just see what would come out and see what seemed interesting. And if something did seem interesting, I'd just kind of see where it would just keep going and see where it would lead.
See, the thing that I like about this is that it takes anything and makes it humorous. For instance, people will do anything to be famous, for the chance to be a celebrity. True. Even just for a few minutes. Famous people would do anything for a chance to be a regular person again. Even just for a day. This just goes to show you. But what?
I know. Someone was telling me about a show where people who had online relationships with someone they never met, and the other person turns out to be a fake, and they did the show about it where they get exposed and so forth. And it's like, why in the world would anybody want, like, the person who was lying the whole time, they're actually willing to go public and let the whole world know that they were lying to this other person? It's like, I can't imagine why they would agree to be on the show, but
yeah, it is really amazing that some of the people that expose themselves that way and go on television and radio.
Yeah, yeah. So that makes the way you expose yourself in this book seem pretty mild by comparison.
Yeah, I do. Also, I didn't want to embarrass anybody else, so I tried to tell nice stories about everybody and ask anybody's permission. I guess maybe a couple times I changed people's names, but usually I tried to.
You really went to high school with Benjamin Netanyahu?
That's right, Benjamin Netanyahu. He went to my high school.
The Prime Minister of Israel. About, gosh, you say if I had known, I would have asked him for his autograph. Of course, he was just another kid in those days.
Now, Chris, how long did you work on this project?
I'd say I spent around half a year doing the first, just writing and writing and writing, getting a big mass of ideas down, and probably another year, a year and a half to edit it down into the form it got into now. So it probably took 2 years. And then even after that, there was a lot more time in refining, doing the final editing, doing the photography. I ended up putting a lot of old photographs in here, which is kind of fun, old family photographs.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went out with a camera and took a few more that I wanted just for humorous effect, just to fill in. So it took, 2.5 years or something.
Did you have some essays that you wrote that didn't make the cut, or were you able to refine all of them?
There was a lot. That after that first batch I wrote, probably took a third of it, maybe, or half of it.
Wow.
So a lot of it got cut out.
And did you work with any other editors?
Yes.
And is one of them sitting here?
One of them is here. She was the best editor because she really was tough on cutting things out. If there was any extra sentence, especially with humor, you really have to get right to the point. So.
Right, yeah, which is what you do.
Now, was that hard for you? You know, they say there's this phrase in that writers use about editing, that you have to throw out your darlings. That sometimes there's a sentence or a phrase that you just love, but it doesn't actually work in the context, and you just have to get rid of it, and it can be really hard. So did you have any trouble throwing out your darlings?
No, it wasn't really. It was, she was always right, and I have to admit.
That's what I love about Chris. I mean, no, he was really very good about it, because I was sometimes afraid to do it, and but whenever I'd read it to him, he'd say, "Oh yeah, that's right,
that works."
Yeah, so that was good.
Because I had a flaw where I'd say a joke or I'd have the punchline, and then I'd put another sentence in. And actually, some other editors pointed that out to me. They said, "You know, you've already made your point, and this is extra." So,
yeah.
And once people pointed out to me, I'd say, "Okay, I see what you're doing," and then I don't have any trouble deleting it.
Well, really good writers are not afraid of being edited, I think. When we first started doing the show, I made the mistake sometimes of agreeing to have people on before I had seen the book. I don't do that anymore, because I had one where someone had self-published a book, and it was so badly in need of being edited. And in the interview, she talked about how, you know, one of the reasons she self-published is because she didn't want to be edited, I had to bite my tongue, because it's like she would have been so much better off with a good editor.
Mm.
Yeah,
it's important, and I actually like it. I like working with an editor, all the editors.
Did you have more than so? You had more than one. You had more than Carol. I'm not gonna say just Carol.
She did the final edit, but I think I had 4 or 5 people read through it and help me edit it.
Great. And you self-published
Yes, I did. And that was a big adventure and a big learning curve because I did not know anything about how to do it. I had a friend who wrote a book in Vermont, and she published with the same company called Lightning Source. She helped me a lot, and then there's a lot of people in Fairfield who have self-published. They helped me. And then I got it into the final version, and I had a computer guy named Paul Delisle in town, and he worked miracles. I never would have completed it if it wasn't for him. It's pretty technically challenging to get it everything into just the right form.
That is one of the issues with self-publishing, is the writers often, they don't have the aesthetic sense to do the formatting that really needs to be done. Even choosing the typeface is important.
Yeah, there was really a lot to think about and do. And
so would you do it again?
Oh, yeah. I want to. I'm working on book two.
All right. Congratulations.
Absolutely.
Well, we are about out of time. Do you have any final words of advice for writers in our audience?
Just the advice is to read good writers and just keep writing.
Right. Well, thank
and
you.
I would also like to say I do have a website, chrishallinger.com, and a Facebook page, Chris Hallinger Author.
Thank you, Chris, for being with us today. This was Chris Hallinger talking about life on Earth. And before we turn the mic over to James Moore with Planet Earthwild, Caroline, do you have some final words for us?
I do. I make lists of things all the time that I want to do every day, and I think this is a good way. Put eat chocolate at the top of your list of things you want to do today. That way, at least you'll get one thing done.
And see you next week on Writer's Voices. Thank you for being with us, Chris.
Thank you.
Writer's Voices is hosted, produced, and engineered by Monica Hadley, Caroline Kilborn, Cheryl Fusco-Johnson, and Corey Hickenbottom. Archives are available at KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com. Writer's Voices is a production of KRUULP 100.1 FM, broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa.